T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Piper here on Medical Frontiers on this chilly evening, right, Rob?
Winter is back.
Had a little bit of snow, a little bit of ice, and, it was like a fall day there a few days ago. And up to 70 degrees, and now it's down to teens. What's happening?
January.
Yeah, it's January.
That's exactly what's happening.
And it'll probably be worse in February, you know.
That's okay. It's winter.
Well, you know, the groundhog is going to be looking at a shadow there on the 2nd, which comes on a Sunday, first Sunday in February. So, okay, Medical Frontiers tonight. Very interesting subject. We have not really done a show. We've done a little parts of what we're going to be talking about tonight, but we never did a whole show about inclusivity. And what do we mean by that in, as far as people getting into a healthcare system when they have various problems? And we're very fortunate to have a repeat guest to Medical Frontiers. He's a nurse practitioner. Stuart Fisk is the director for the Allegheny Health Network Center for Inclusion Health. And we're glad to have you back here, Stuart.
Thanks.
And,
good to be back.
And what do we mean by that? We talked a little bit. I talked to Rob a little bit about that, a little tease for the show. But sort of encapsulate that for us in a paragraph. You know, what do we mean by inclusivity when we're talking about a healthcare system?
Sure. So we've recognized for a long time that there are people who don't seem to access healthcare very well. And I think what we've increasingly recognized, and what I've increasingly recognized over 30 years in doing healthcare, is that we actually have created a lot of barriers for people to get into care, where their culture is understood, where their language is understood, where their mental health problems and is understood, where people, there's an understanding of what it's like to be homeless or to not have enough food, and then begin to incorporate those things into a person's plan of healthcare. So in the Center for Inclusion Health, we're really trying to break down those barriers by transforming our health system, by opening doors, by teaching healthcare providers how to be more inclusive and how to understand populations that we've not always exposed ourselves to. And our goal in doing that is not only to provide really good healthcare for those populations of people, whether they're immigrants or transgendered people or people with addiction, people who are homeless, but it's also to provide to create a better healthcare system that's better equipped to take care of all of us.
Yeah, and I think one way to look at it is that we're all human beings. You know, we have some differences. You know, some of us are males, some are females, some of us are a little bit of both. And we have different cultures, we have different likes, we have different dislikes, we have different politics, we have different religions, but we're all human beings. And I think as a society, we have to realize that no matter where we come from, no matter what our background is, no matter what our baggage is we're carrying, we still have some needs that need to be met. And we need to have, you know, an appropriate diet. We have to have appropriate shelter. We have to feel safe. And whenever we need medical care, we want to be able to access the medical system so that we can get good medical care, no matter where we come from or who we are. Is that sort of it in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, all the differences that you laid out are absolutely true, and in many ways are what make the world an incredible place, is the differences. But the fact is we all get sick. We all have accidents. We all need to be taken care of. And we all deserve the same standard of care when that happens.
Yeah. Okay. And we also have another guest with us this evening. And I don't know whether she really wants to be here.
Of course I do.
but I'm glad she is, because I get to meet somebody I didn't know before. And she is also a nurse practitioner, and it's none other than Jean Fitzgibbons. And Jean is part of this program that Stuart was talking about. And she's been working in the program now for about a year as a nurse practitioner. And welcome to Medical Frontiers.
I'm glad to be here.
Good having you here. And tell us a little bit about the Perinatal Hope Program. You're involved with that.
I am.
Is that sort of your baby? No pun intended.
That's a very good pun. So the Perinatal Hope Program does predate my time a little bit with Allegheny Health Network. It's been around for about 3 years, and it is a program that specializes in just women who have any sort of substance use in pregnancy. So we follow women with any, whether it be opiate use disorder, cocaine use disorder, any sort of substance use. So long as they're pregnant, they would be qualified for our program. It's a pretty comprehensive medical home care model. So we would see them for their medication. If they do require medication for their substance use disorder, we see them. We have a social worker. We have drug and alcohol counseling that they all get in one visit, in addition to their obstetric care. What they had been the wonderful people who created the program, and I've been fortunate enough to jump on to this great program they designed, were finding where women were having to choose between obstetric care, their medication to treat their opiate use disorder, and drug and alcohol counseling. And when you have all of these appointments that you have to make, and most of these women already have children at home, it just became a matter of competing needs for folks. And so folks were not always engaging in obstetric care. And so our goal was to make a comprehensive model so we could ensure that women were able to get obstetric care in addition to the care they needed for their substance use disorder, and have a supportive environment that could follow them for up to 2 years after delivery. So that's a prime part of my job. And I also do some street outreach with an all-female team that goes out and tries to engage with women living on the street to engage them in care.
And there's another individual in this equation. If a woman who is pregnant is addicted to drugs or alcohol or what have you, is the baby that is going to be born at the end of this pregnancy. And so the baby also may have some special needs.
They may be
influenced by alcohol. Mm-hmm. Maybe influenced by opiates and so on. So they need some special care in the NICU.
Absolutely. And we have an incredible NICU team, both at West Penn, Jefferson, and Forbes, that are able to take care for these women and these babies once they're here.
Okay, this is Medical Frontiers for this Monday night, and we're talking with Stuart Fisk and Jean Fitzgibbons. They're both nurse practitioners in the program to improve inclusivity in the Allegheny Health Network with particular patients that we've been talking about. So give us a call at 866-391-1020. If you're compromised, if you're a pregnant woman and you're compromised by being in a tough domestic situation, if you're addicted to alcohol or drugs or any problems like that, and you would like to talk to us tonight, we'd love to hear your story. You can call anonymously. You don't have to tell us where you live. You don't have to tell us your name. Just tell us that you would like to have a conversation with our guests. We'll be back after the break. Okay, we are back on Medical Frontiers here for this Monday evening. And we have two guests in our studio this evening, Stuart Fisk and Jean Fitzgibbons. They are both nurse practitioners. That means that they are registered nurses, and then they took extra education to become a nurse practitioner. They're responsible, or they have more responsibilities as a nurse practitioner than as an RN. And we were talking before the break about some of the programs that Allegheny Health Network has to include, especially women, in some of these problem areas. A woman who is pregnant and is addicted to alcohol or drugs or has some other issues, their pregnancy is still very, very important to them, but for the baby and others. And so we need to be able to give them good medical care no matter what requirements they have for that good medical care. So give us a call, 866-391-1020. Gene, I talked to you a little bit about in the break about the Women's Behavioral Health Center for Perinatal Mental Health, and we've talked about that before on Medical Frontiers, a program where if we screen women early in their pregnancy, it may be possible to foresee those women who are at high risk for postnatal depression. Mm-hmm. And so every woman who comes to Allegheny Health Network and is pregnant,
yes,
and going to have their baby either at West Penn or at Jefferson, and I don't know, is it Forbes? Do they have? I don't think they do. It's at Jefferson and West Penn, their Allegheny Health Network, where we have obstetric services. But they're screened early on because we know that postnatal depression is something we don't want to see any woman go through.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Program.
So Allegheny Health Network has created the Women's Behavioral Health Program, which is a comprehensive program. They have everything from individual therapy, counselors. They do group. They have a outpatient program. So women who have any sort of depression, anxiety, whether that be through pregnancy or after delivery or any sort of mental health diagnosis, can engage with that care. There are psychiatrists who can manage medications, which is really a special skill that, you know, women can have that opportunity to talk to folks. There's a lot of fear about taking medication in pregnancy and how that could affect their baby, and wanting to make sure that they're doing everything they can, which can contribute to sort of mood and mental health issues. So having a psychiatrist who does this all day and can really talk to them about the risks and benefits of taking these medications in pregnancy and what feels safe and appropriate for each individual patient is a really wonderful opportunity to be able to provide to these folks. Yes, they see women who are pregnant and after delivery, and through all Allegheny Health Network OB practices, women are screened in pregnancy for depression and mood disorders on standardized tools. And then after delivery as well, they're screened to make sure that we're capturing any sort of conditions, you know, mental health problems in the very early stages to get women the help that they need.
And my understanding from talking about this before on Medical Frontiers with other folks who are involved with the program is that it just doesn't include the woman. It includes the baby. You can bring your baby to these sessions, and they can be group sessions, some individual sessions and so on, but the daddy can be involved, mm-hmm. the siblings can be involved.
100%.
Because when a woman brings a new baby home and she's depressed and not feeling well, mm-hmm. has an effect not only on her, but on her partner, yes. and on the siblings if they're in the household, and maybe the grandparents and sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law. Yes. It has a big effect. And so all of that can be included in trying to lower the risk of postnatal depression, mm-hmm. and also treating it if it's necessary to be treated.
Yes, they really have a comprehensive program. They have an intensive outpatient program, so women can go there three times a week for a three-hour session. They are encouraged to bring their babies to those sessions, and they do have some child care that's provided for older siblings. They also, you know, have classes to teach life skills like cooking and all sorts of different opportunities for women to feel like they are getting the tools they need to not only deal with their mental health, but to prepare themselves in early parenthood.
And that kitchen is just like you would find in a home.
Right? Yeah, it is,
yeah.
Yes.
And that could be another incentive. They fix some pretty good meals there for everybody involved,
it
right?
It smells good.
Come
sometimes.
On in, we'll fix a nice lunch. But it's wonderful that program is. And part of that was instituted by a man who lost his wife to suicide, I believe, mm-hmm. because of postnatal depression. And yep. so he helped to, I guess, co-found.
Yeah, this, she's been instrumental.
A program with Allegheny Health Network, which is really an amazing program.
Such a beautiful, you know, thing to come out of such a tragic loss. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there are other issues also, like women who are addicted can have some secondary problems. You know, they may get infections from shooting up. They may have some problems with their heart or their kidneys or whatever. And so those are issues that can be addressed also if that woman has accessed the facility to do that.
Yes.
Right? Stuart, would you like to say something about that?
Yeah, sure. So those types of secondary infections, I mean, it could be HIV. We see a lot of hepatitis C, but we also see these deep tissue infections from injecting drugs, using needles that are unclean because people don't have access to clean needles very often, or cleaner injection supplies. So we see these infections. They're really devastating often, and they require long-term care, long-term IV antibiotics. And so we've actually created, people also come in with wounds and things. So there's a lot of things that go along with that drug injection scenario that can be long-term health problems. So we've actually created, in partnership with the Kane Nursing Homes in Allegheny County, a 30-bed unit that provides skilled nursing for people with substance use disorders. We also have a medical respite program at Bethlehem Haven Shelter downtown. It's a 30-bed unit that will allow people to come out of the hospital that don't have either a safe place to live or a safe place to receive medical care. And they can get that post-acute, post-hospitalization care, so IV antibiotics, physical therapy, wound care. And very often, you know, we've seen pregnant women. We see a lot of women come through that program.
And we talked a little bit before the show that there's a certain stigma that has to be at least approached, you know, and try to get rid of that. Is that if it's a homeless person, you know, we're not walking in their shoes. We don't know why they're homeless. Somebody who has hepatitis, you know, what was that? Is it due to doing drugs or whatever? Somebody who is addicted to drugs. So we don't know their whole story, but we do know that they deserve medical care. And so we have to break through that stigma, because a lot of these folks, they, because of the baggage they carry, they think, well, I'm not worthy enough to be taken care of by those folks in that big fancy hospital and so on. So we need to take a break. All right. And this is Medical Frontiers. And next week we're talking about abdominal cancers. But tonight it is inclusivity and women's health. Give us a call at 866-391-1020.
The following program is paid for by the Allegheny Health Network.
All right. We are back on Medical Frontiers. And we are talking about inclusivity in women's health, and we talked before the break what that means, and we're going to continue on with that conversation. But if you would like to give us a call and tell us your story, if you have some special needs as a pregnant woman, say, maybe you're addicted to drugs or alcohol, or you're in an abusive situation or whatever, you still need prenatal care. You still need to be someplace to have that baby delivered and good care afterwards. So if you would like to hear more about how you can access these programs at Allegheny Health Network, give us a call. We'd love to hear your story. You don't have to give your name. You don't have to say where you live. And if you are a family member of somebody who has this type of a need, tell them about it. Tell them about it, and they can call 412-DOCTORS or Allegheny Health Network, AHN.org, to access the program. Very, very important. And Stuart Fisk, one of the nurse practitioners here and the director of the inclusivity program at AHN, I asked him during the break two things. Are you getting busier? In other words, are more people, we're talking about women primarily tonight for women's health care, are we getting busier? And number two, are we making a difference? Stuart?
I think we are making a difference and we are getting busier. As we begin to roll out more and more programs like our healthy food centers, where when we screen people coming into clinics now, we ask them, do they have enough food to get through the month? And if they say no, they get referred to our healthy food center, which gives them food for their entire household, but also geared towards their health condition. So if they're diabetic or have heart failure or hypertension, they're meeting with a registered dietitian who has access to their health record. We've begun to do significant analysis of the data coming out of that. So we've served close to 40,000 meals from the Healthy Food Center at West Penn, and now we just opened one at Allegheny General Hospital.
In what length of time, 40,000, since the inception of the program?
About 18 months.
18 months?
Yeah.
It's a lot of food.
It's a lot of food. It's a lot of food, and people need it. And what we've been able to see is that people's diabetes is getting better. Their hypertension is getting better. They're not having recurrences of heart failure because they're getting better food. They're able to pay for their medications instead of buying food. And we teach them how to cook food healthier. So we don't just give people, you know, bags of chips and salty canned food. We have walk-in refrigerator freezers at each of these centers. And there will be these centers at every single hospital eventually. They can get fresh produce, frozen meats. They can get healthy foods. They can learn how to cook them. We give them utensils to cook with if they don't have them. We give them transportation to and from the food centers. And this is all right on the campus of our hospitals. These food centers are going to be tremendously helpful and have been to people with substance use disorders, with poverty, with children, or even people just kind of living paycheck to paycheck that sometimes run out of money at the end of the month and don't have food. So those are the things we call the social determinants of health. They're the things that aren't about a bad heart necessarily or a bad kidney, but it's about the things in our environment that contribute to either causing poorer health or that if we can change the relationship with food, with housing, and other things like that, then we can actually create healthier people and healthier communities.
Yeah, and it may not be because of a bad heart or a bad kidney, but if they're eating better, if they're and get away from some of these things that they may be addicted to, they may not mm-hmm. develop a bad heart or a bad kidney.
Well, exactly.
And so prevention is so important, because if you can prevent a kidney infection that may lead to failure later on, that is not only much better for the patient, but it's also much better for society, because we don't have to pay for the complications
exactly.
of treating a bad kidney, which may mean dialysis or a kidney transplant, which is exceedingly expensive. And the other thing I hear sometimes, and we talked a little bit about this before the show, is that, hey, how can you afford to do that? And I think, Jane, you said we can't afford not to. What
yes.
did you mean by that?
I think that if you work in healthcare for any amount of time, you see the outcome of folks who aren't able to engage in care, don't feel as though this is a health system that is able to cater to them. You see such poor outcomes for these folks, really devastating outcomes, and folks who really feel as though, you know, their lives' existence doesn't matter because we've never taken the time to help them see that we are here to care for them. Is a healthcare system. We care for all folks from all walks of life, as anyone who works in healthcare believes, but we sometimes have these systems set up that folks are just not able to engage in. And so it is, I think, our job in healthcare to break down these barriers and make healthcare more accessible to those most in need, because that's what we are here to do.
Okay. Stuart, isn't she doing a great job?
She's doing an amazing
job. Okay. We don't even need you here.
No, you really don't. And you know what? And that's my career goal, is to retire and leave this all to the people that do it better than me.
Work yourself out of a job and have this younger generation take care of it, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Jean said that she was nervous, and she certainly doesn't sound nervous. Are you nervous any longer?
I'm feeling much more comfortable.
Okay.
Welcoming environment.
All right. That's our job here on Medical Frontiers, make folks feel more comfortable. And I think it's great. You know, whenever there is a natural disaster, you know, yeah, we need to do triage and so on, but you know, we don't do triage on socioeconomic lines. We don't do triage on age. We don't do triage on whether or not this person looks different than we do. We take care of everybody to the best of our ability, you know, whether it's a plane crash, a bus accident, an earthquake, or a hurricane or whatever. We get away from those stigmas, which I mm-hmm. think is great. It's terrible to have those disasters.
Right.
But, in our military, we take care of all of the casualties, to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. We don't say, well, he's a captain or a general or, a private. They all get, and that's what we have to do as a society. Look at everybody as we're all equal, and so we deserve equal care, yes. And we need to get that word out. We need to get the word out in the community. And Stuart, before we take our break, tell us a little bit about how we can get the word out to the homeless, to the pregnant woman has nowhere to turn, and she doesn't know who to talk to. She doesn't know who to call.
So, one of the things we do, particularly with populations that have been so excluded, like injection drug users, like homeless people, like people with persistent mental illness, is we go to them. We don't wait for them to come to us. So we have outreach teams. We have an incredible street medicine and outreach team that works with outreach workers from Operation Safety Net. We provide medical providers. We go out, and we may not be providing a lot of medical care in the field, but we're creating engagement and trust with people who believe that they're not, or have been made to believe that they're not worthy to come into our facilities. And when they come in, we judge them, we treat them poorly. So we engage with them, but then we bring them into a primary care setting or an addiction medicine clinic or a perinatal hope program where they are welcomed, where they are understood, and they're treated with compassion and respect. And that is what engages them with us, with our health system, and keeps them engaged, improves their health, saves us money, and most of all, makes their quality of life better.
I know there's a physician, a street physician, who his practice is taking care of the homeless. He does it as a mission. He takes care of the homeless. I don't know what he does for a livelihood, how he eats and takes care of things like that, his own needs and so on. But it's wonderful that there are people like that who will take care of the homeless.
There are. We train them and we pay them.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
They deserve to be paid and they deserve to be trained.
Absolutely. Okay, this is Medical Frontiers. We need to take another break. This is our last break before we take the final break to say goodnight. But give us a call, 866-391-1020. And if you don't want to call, that's just keep listening. We'll give you some good information. We'll be back. Okay, we are back on our last segment of Medical Frontiers for this Monday, January 20th already of 2020. You realize this is 1-20-2020. You realize that?
Yeah. Did not.
Till right. Isn't that now. Amazing? Mm-hmm. If we had 20 months in a year, why, we could probably be 2020-2020. But for today, until midnight, it's 1-20-2020. And a lot of people are talking about 2020. It stands for perfect vision, or what we would call normal vision, 20/20. And I think that's kind of neat. Hopefully 2020 can be a time when we have a little more clear vision about where we are and where we need to be. And let's talk a little bit, and we'll start with you, Gene. What do you see out there in the next 10-15 years with this particular effort where we are providing medical care for, let's say, people are compromised in one way or another, physically, mentally, chemically?
In my ideal world, we'd sort of break down some of the stigma that exists with these conditions, which I think prevents a lot of folks from engaging in care because of fear of being judged, a lack of familiarity, like Stuart was saying. In an ideal model, if we can get folks who have, a certain condition into a general practice, we can normalize some of the stuff and providers can be comfortable managing all sorts of conditions. you know, outside of what they, you know, they see day to day currently, and make it so it's a very welcoming environment, all healthcare practices. So for folks who are homeless, who, you know, come in and are immediately asked for things like IDs and street addresses, for, you know, those things that prevent folks from engaging in care, I would like to see those melt away. So we have a welcoming environment for folks from any walk of life to come in and to know that this is a safe space for them to be in, and a place that they are not only welcome in, but they're encouraged to participate in, like the rest of the population. Most people don't have a huge fear of going to the doctor if they, you know, have a pretty stable life. But the second you start to get something that's quote unquote out of the norm, then it can become a really daunting place to have to go.
Yeah. And it takes caring people to take care of people, right?
That's the saying, yes.
Okay. I knew an orthopedic surgeon in the past that he wanted his practice to be ideal. He wanted all of his patients to have a wonderful attitude and wanted them to think that he was wonderful, the best orthopedic surgeon around. But they couldn't be overweight. They couldn't have a bad attitude. They couldn't have been hurt at work, which would be a workers' comp case, okay? And it had to be totally compliant if he wanted that individual to go to physical therapy 3 times a week for 6 weeks, and they missed, well, I don't want to see you anymore, you're not following the directions, et cetera, et cetera. We can't do that. We can't do that. That's not the way our society is. Some of us are overweight. Some of us are underweight because we don't get enough nourishing food. Some of us are a different color. Some of us are a different culture from the standpoint of what we believe politically, religiously, or whatever. And so that's our society. And we have to learn that we need to take care of all comers. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, when an emergency arises, you know, you're, and I had this conversation one time with a person who is a pastor, a female pastor in New York City, and they're working on having an all-inclusive church, accept all comers. I said, you know, the hospital where I worked for 40 years is really an ideal model for, because we have workers of all colors, workers of all cultures, including physicians, nurses, medical assistants, orderlies, housekeepers, food service people, maintenance people. You know what? But we all had one goal, and that was to provide a facility that was safe and the environment to take good care of patients. And it really didn't make any difference whether someone was a Republican, a Democrat, an atheist, a Muslim, you know, a Presbyterian, whatever. We all worked together. That didn't make a difference. Wouldn't it be wonderful, Stuart, if our whole society was like that?
Well, it would be great. And I think, you know, and I have to say that I don't think I worked quite in the same hospital you did. And one of the things, so we don't always work together.
Right.
But I think that one of the things that we try to do in the Center for Inclusion Health is to get people to work in teams. Because your orthopedic surgeon that wanted a perfect practice could manage a perfect practice by himself. If he got rid of everybody that was a troublemaker or complex or didn't do what he said. We need teams of people to deal with that complexity so that the doctor doesn't have to do all the work.
Right. And we have to work together.
We have to work
for
together.
For a common goal.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And and that's possible. It's possible. But it takes work.
It takes a lot of work.
You know, when a person comes in with an emergency, they may be unconscious. It may have been an auto accident, motorcycle accident, or whatever. They're unconscious. We can't even take a history from them. Yeah, and we don't know, you know, whether they are an atheist or, you know, what have you. We don't know anything about their political background, about their religious background, but we take care of them, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes all of that will come out later on, you know, during their rehab and that type of thing. But with the initial taking care, we have to take care of that individual. Even if they're a murderer, you know, They're a human being, and our job is to take care of them to the best of our ability. If they're a sexual abuser, we still have to take care of them and let the law and our justice system take care of those things that we have no control over. You know, so it's hard, but if we work at it, we can do a better job.
Absolutely.
All right. Mm-hmm. Next week, we're going to be talking about abdominal cancers. And just for in a few sentences, Stuart, the same question to you. What do you see out there in the future 10 years about what we're talking about tonight?
Well, I see a healthcare system that if we can pull together, create multidisciplinary teams, begin to deal with people's social problems as well as their medical problems, I see a healthcare system that's affordable and functional.
Okay. Very good. You wrapped it up. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is Medical Frontiers. And thanks so much for listening. Gene, it wasn't so bad tonight, was it?
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll get you back. Yeah. Okay. Stuart, always good seeing you.
Thank you very much.
I want to say good night. Happy New Year to everybody. It's 1/20/2020. Be back in 1 week.
Medical Frontiers is an informational program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnosis, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.